thoughts on what you're going to ask me or anything.
Well, sure. We were going to talk about the history of the center and the history of the festival mostly. That's what she's interested in.
Okay.
So if you want to have just a second to think about what you might want to say, so you want to embarrass yourself in front of all your friends and neighbors and hundreds and thousands of people around.
Well, I doubt if there'll be that many. I don't think there's that many.
We've never really had a chance to talk very much, have we? When did you first come? Well, you grew up here, didn't you?
Oh, sure. Fourth generation Floridian.
Fourth generation.
Mm-hmm. Living on the same property that my great-grandfather homesteaded.
Yeah.
And we now have six generations living on the same property. I used to say that if I could ever get out of those woods so I could see some bright lights and anything moving, that you'd never find me back out in them again.
I don't believe it.
Well, as you see, the circle turns and you find that home is the best place after all.
Well, it's surely a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lovely place to be, sir. So you're living in the old traditional style, really, now, aren't you?
Well, of course, we built a modern brick home out there about 4 or 5 years ago. But it's on the same property. I mean, you know, it was 240 acres, or 260, 280, I've forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
280, I suppose. Let me see. 80, 160. 240 is what usually they homesteaded, wasn't it?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I think you were allowed to homestead 240 acres, one family.
Hmm. So how many are out there now?
Well, my sister and I live out there. She lives, we're all within about four blocks of each other, but you can't see our houses because there's lots of thick woods in between.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you get mixed up with this place?
Well, of course, I came to the dedication October 4th, 1950, as a teenager, pumping Cokes for the thousands of people who came. We were still in high school. And they asked the high school students to come over. October 4th, 1950, I think it was on Saturday or Sunday. It was a weekend day. And they had a huge dinner on the grounds for everybody who came. Fuller Warren came as the guest speaker. It was the Florida A&M choir band came and played under the direction of what was his name? He's been over there for years and years, that did that fantastic marching band.
Oh, I shouldn't remember his name, because he was there recently.
Oh, well, I think he's
still
affiliated with the music department.
Oh, I should remember his name.
Foster.
That's right.
James
sure.
D. Foster.
Well,
how
course,
could we ever forget
that?
You don't have that on, do you?
Oh, yeah, sure.
No, that's not very fair.
You saw me start it.
Well, yeah, well, no, I really thought you were giving
here.
Me time to collect my thoughts.
You are, you have.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cheat you, but that's, sure, this is all real interesting.
And after school, of course, we were all very proud of the center because it was located right here in our hometown, and we saw it grow. And I worked part-time before I was a full-time employee here. Came to work in the gift shops with the Stephen Foster Association, which was a group of businessmen who had pooled their resources and bought stock for gift shops and a Conestoga wagon that toured the grounds and a boat that ran on the Suwannee River.
Mm-hmm.
The state would not appropriate any capital to start the different supporting features here at the center, and a group of local businessmen, I can recall some of the names, but you're probably not interested in that. Put their pool of resources together and took the stock, and I started to work in the gift shop. And then Miss Bolton was hired in 1955, I believe. She became a full-time employee. The festival started in 53. And Sarah Gertrude Knott directed the first three festivals coming down from Princeton, Kentucky. But Thelma Bolton was on the first program as a participant, as a tale teller.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 3 years, Alton Morris, who, of course, published Folk Songs of Florida, said to Thelma, you know, we really need to have someone in Florida producing our Florida Folk Festival there at the center.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need to call on out-of-state. Sarah was good, and she needs to act as a consultant. But we need to have someone there at the center who can contact individuals all year long and travel and research. Now they call it field work, but at that time it was going out into the state and finding individuals who you felt would do a good program here at the center. The festival was suggested by Ada Holden Miller, who was a citizen of Providence, Rhode Island. Mrs. W.A. Saunders was a longtime Board of Trustees member. Of course, she resides right here in town, and she was very instrumental in getting the center started here. As early as in the 30s, the Federation of Music Clubs were talking about a memorial here on the banks of the Suwannee River to have musicales and to honor Foster with maybe a heroic statue.
Really? Uh-huh. That long ago?
It was not until 1939 that the legislature appropriated any capital to support this. But they were able to acquire 100 acres here on the banks of the river, and they bumped up and down the Suwannee and pickup trucks, and they were searching for a place on the river that it never overflowed and was on a major highway. Mm-hmm. And at that time, U.S. 41 was a major highway. So they decided, well, why not White Springs? They had considered Branford, and they had considered Old Town at one time. But anyway, it wound up here because the citizens came forth and contributed 100 acres. The center now is comprised of 250 acres, and only 8 of those acres were bought by state funds.
Really?
The other 250 were given by local citizens. And, of course, much of that acreage was given by the Saunders family or the Adams family here in town.
Mm-hmm. But
the
town is really tightly involved with the center.
It's always been. Mrs. Ada Holden Miller was national president of the National Federation of Music Clubs, and she came to White Springs when the old Colonial Hotel was here at our entrance coming into the Stephen Foster Memorial, it was called at that time.
Mm-hmm. And now, how long ago was the hotel there?
The hotel stood until 1973.
Really?
It was torn down in 1973. The reason why I remember it was after the 1972 festival, and of course it was vacated at the time. It was standing empty, and that's when a lot of people went in and set mattresses on fire, you know, and it really was a fire hazard down there.
So they just took it down.
But they took a survey of that old hotel and found out it would cost somewhere near $200,000 just to have it rewired.
Just to have it rewired.
I'm sorry it was torn down, it was just, I think it was in the process of being on the
National Register
for Historic Buildings. Of course, that was the same year the Spring House came down, the old structure around it, because it was condemned.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she was visiting here and suggested to Mrs. Saunders, who later held the president of the Florida Federation of Music Clubs, and could have been president at that time. I'd have to do some research to find out whether Mrs. Saunders was president of the Florida Federation. But she said, you know, Lillian, you folks ought to get busy and have a folk festival down here. That environment is just what is needed as a part of your music programming there at the memorial, as it was called then. And so at her suggestion, Mrs. Saunders scouted around the country and found out they were having a national folk festival, and Sarah Gertrude Knott was instrumental in directing and programming that. So she said, will you come down and get us started? And, of course, she did. She came down a year in advance and went into a lot of the smaller communities in the area and trekked up and down Florida. And from the very beginning, the Bessida dancers from Masaryk Town came. They were sponsored by local agencies in the early years. I know there was a Mrs. Likes down there that supported the Masaryk Town group of Bessida dancers that came up and danced
and
under the direction of Francis Valenta. The Greeks at Tarpon Springs was represented on some of the earlier festivals. And from a very small beginning, it's grown into, in 83, its 31st year.
It's one of the oldest in the country, maybe the oldest.
Well, continuously running, I'm sure the National Folk Festival is older. But we've never missed a year. You know, in 72, when they decided not to have a festival because we really became too popular at that time.
Right.
We really appealed to the masses, and they
poured
in on us.
It was the national pastime, then going to festivals.
Hootenanny Days, and folk was in high vogue. But in 72, after the May Festival, they decided not to have it. Well, of course, you know what happened right after then, the gas crunch. Mm-hmm. And they decided, well, yeah, we could still have it, but let's move it to September. And maybe we won't appeal, especially to the college masses like
right.
in
who were
May.
Not nearly as interested in folk music as they were just coming to have a big party.
Well, I think it was a combination of both. Mm-hmm. But we happened to be programming the festival in those days right at a break.
Mm-hmm.
You remember?
Yeah.
And they were ready to get out of the
yes.
harness of mm-hmm. school days and go find some place to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
crazy.
That was pre-Daytona days, too, you know,
right.
along about
been.
Where they were uh-huh. discovering both uh-huh. at the same time.
And that really wasn't the function of the festival. It wasn't the purpose.
Well, we, of course, want always the college student to come. We're because that's where a lot of our appeal begins, is when the students are in school. And, of course, they now teach folklore classes in most
sure.
of the colleges. And, well, a lot of our participation have come from individuals who came when they were in college and later said, you know, I'd like to be a part of that festival mm-hmm. one way or the other. And
mm-hmm.
I can name a lot of names, but I won't, who came as a student and later performed on our stage.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our performers have grown up on our stage. We've seen three generations now.
Well, it's very much a family festival, isn't it? The feeling of it is, well, all right, we won't get into it, I guess.
Well, I like to consider it that.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly family-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
I think that everything you see on stage would not be offensive to any family,
mm-hmm.
whereas I've never been to a lot of folk festivals, but some of them, I'm sure, if you don't watch what's there, could be interpreted.
Yes, yes, I know what you're talking
differently.
About. Differently. Yeah, we'll be careful with this in the program. I doubt if we get into any of this.
No,
on any of
I hope
the
not.
Program. I know, I've never been there, but I heard that Fox Hollow was very similar in spirit. And there's a certain special spirit that the Florida Folk Festival
Well, you
has.
Know, Fox Hollow is no more.
I know, I know.
They went through 15 years, and I had the privilege of going up to, I think, the 13th or 14th Fox mm-hmm. Hollow in Petersburg, New York, mm-hmm. under the direction of Evelyn Beers. Mm-hmm. It started off under the direction of Bob and Evelyn Beers. And, of course, they came in the early 60s to the Florida Folk Festival after Thelma Bolton had visited a national festival and had found them, and they were interested. In the early years, we had guest artists come from out of state.
Yes.
Primarily, we did not feature out-of-state artists, but we would have a sprinkling of unique artists come. And Bob and Evelyn, of course, were certainly unique. She had a lovely, untrained, true voice, and Bob played a unique instrument called the psaltery that dates back to biblical days, and it's really a shimmering instrument to hear. And they came with their family. They had one daughter named Martha, and she had a lovely voice, and they sang and played the songs that had been handed down in the Beers family and in her family.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they were certainly crowd pleasers to the early audiences. I can remember other out-of-state guest artists that we had, including Michael Moore from Denver, Colorado. He was certainly a crowd pleaser for many years. A Cherokee Indian by the name of Fred Beaver, who mm-hmm. now is a renowned artist, and he used to drive all the way from Ardmore, Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
to come and take part in the festival because his brother still lived here on the banks of the, well, in Florida. The Seminoles used to come up, and this would be the two nations meeting again.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was Creek? Do the Cherokees come from the Creek Nation?
Yeah, I think it's part of us.
I think that's right. I'm not sure, but yeah. It was beautiful to see them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that was when Billy Bowlegs was coming, and he was certainly a stately person to have here on mm-hmm. the banks of the river. And he had hunted and fished here as a boy, and so had his ancestors. You know, Sal Marie Branch runs right north of here, and that was named for well, you know, the Chief Osceola,
oh,
his mother.
Oh, is that right?
Uh-huh. They used to camp right here in this area. This was sacred, did you know?
Yeah.
6 mile radius around the springs down here, the White Sulphur Springs, and they used to call it the spa, the spring of healing water. And no matter what battles were going on between the tribes, they called a truce in this area so that their warriors could be brought down to the healing waters. And of course, you know, that's what made White Springs a thriving resort around the turn of the century, was the springs that flowed approximately 32,000 gallons of pure mineral water a day.
There were a number of hotels here, weren't there?
Many hotels. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Of course, they burned, you know.
Mm-hmm. The turn of the century?
Later than that. Later than that. February 28th, 1911. I want to say. I'd have to do some research on that. But it started from a Baptist parsonage and spread through. The men were out hunting. Of course, that was during the hunting season. And this was, and still is, a region where many hunters go out. And only the women folk were left at home. And when it spread, there was no one to fight the fire. And it burned most of the larger hotels, including the High House and the Paxton House and others that were around. Of course, there were other fine hotels left even after that, but we only have one now left, and that's the old Telford Hotel, and it's made out of Suwannee River coral and brick, and it has a colorful past, too.
Were most of the hotels about that size or larger?
Yes, they were larger. Even the Edgewood is reported to have had Margaret Mitchell stay there, as well as other important people of that era. And of course, they had a huge dance ballroom, and that was when gambling was wide open, and some of our ministers was preaching against the wicked town of White Springs.
That's fascinating. I didn't know. I knew there was a lot of tourists around.
Well, you know, that was before the automobile was.
It all was by rail?
Come in here from Georgia Southern and Pacific, packed. Because that was when people had to go to one destination, make it their vacation, and get back on the train and go to another place. With the invention of the automobile, we could go to the mountains or to the beach. We didn't have to have a destination where the railroads ran through. But they'd put them out down at the railroad depot and haul them into hacks. They said they'd come in just packed on the back of that train and get off here. And, of course, it was noted for its food. Excellent cuisine.
Local game, a lot of game.
Well, one hotel in particular, the Hamilton House, which burned earlier than the fire, had its own dog kennel, its own electricity, raised its own vegetables. I mean, they were just self-supporting, you know, and people just came in especially for that. Of course, you know, I think now the Dillard House up in Dillard, Georgia does that same thing. Have you ever eaten there?
No. Mm-hmm. No. I'll have to make a note of that.
I know a lot of this you're not going to be able to use, I can tell.
Well, but it's certainly interesting to me whether we get in the program or not. I don't know if you've ever sat down and talked about this with these folks, about the history of White Springs.
Don't have time to.
Well, that's a good thing you're doing it now, then. This is real interesting.
You did know that the first Girl Scout troop in Florida was located right here on the grounds and was founded by Juliette Lowe.
Oh, yeah.
Second one in the United States.
Right, I've seen the little plaque over there. I didn't know that.
And I did an interview one time with one of the members before she died, Bonnie Sanders, over in Live Oak. And as a troop, they went over to Fernandina when Lindbergh came and marched in the parade over there. The troop from White Springs.
Wow, that's nice. Well, you can maybe answer a question I've had about all this marble, the old marble stage.
Of course. They call that the federal building, but it was an old post office building that was torn down. In the early 40s, and they had the money to pay transportation costs to have it hauled over here.
This was in Jacksonville?
That was in Jacksonville, the old post office building, with the hopes that they could take that marble and use it to erect some type of memorial to Foster. They had first had plans drawn for a beautiful marble amphitheater that would be impervious to the weather, and they could have music house presented here on the banks of the Suwannee. But the war came, and of course, in those years, and they didn't, they only turned loose enough money, the Florida legislature, to fence it and to hire a caretaker. And that was Foster L. Barnes. He was the first curator here at the center. And it was no other monies were appropriated for the continuation of the Stephen Foster Memorial after that, until after the war years. And they kept it in existence because they kept saying, we have all this fine marble. And they would turn loose a little money to pay the curator, and he'd be drawing landscape plans and things like this. But had they not had that marble here on the grounds, I'm sure they would have scrapped any plans of having it. And ironically enough, they did turn loose money to support the memorial, but they found out that it was more expensive to cut that marble than it was to buy a new one.
Is it Georgia marble?
Well, I'm not sure. I was told later that that was granite that was hauled from the old post office. I'm not a geologist, so I don't know.
Looks like marble.
Looks like marble.
Yeah.
Well, and there's much of it still scattered around the grounds here.
Let me just ask you, this is probably a long question, but I'd like to know, for the purposes of the program, some of your duties. How can I just... I know you have thousands of duties, I'm sure. Can you just...
I hate to get into that. It doesn't look like I have any, you know, when I start thinking about them.
No. Well, what's your title? Let me just ask you.
Well, it's administrative assistant.
That's pretty nice.
That's a state title.
But I know that you must have as much to do with putting on the Florida Folk Festival as anybody.
Well, in years past, certainly. I worked with Thelma Bolton, who was the director until she semi-retired in 1968. And she would come back months in advance, and we would work on the festival. And since the change, you know, we had a 79, saw the end of the old Stephen Foster Center as we knew it, and the beginning of what we now have now, the Florida State's Department of Folklife Program, which is mandated to document research and further folk music and folk ways and folk life in the state of Florida. This is sort of like the program in arm that works here at the Stephen Foster State Folk Culture Center, as it's now called, the 250 acres here on the banks of the Suwannee. And the facilities were then turned over to the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Recreation and Parks, whose duties is to take care of the grounds and buildings and put in exhibits and things that support the Folk Culture Center. And at the beginning of 1979, of course, we were still having bluegrass festivals in the spring and the fall, and Stephen Foster Music Days, and the Florida Folk Festival, and numerous other special events that related to the life of Foster. And as we came more involved with researching and documenting folk life, of course, some of the things were evaluated and decided that they did not really fall into the categories. For instance, genie auditions. They still take place here at the center, but we no longer sponsor the genie auditions. It's done by the Florida Federation of Music Clubs. We assist them with coordinating parts of this, but they basically do all of it and financially take care of this end. Bluegrass festivals were two things that we decided that we could have part of that during the festival as a cross-section of folk that was presented during that time. But we did not want to become known as a bluegrass center. So we may have bluegrass programs, but I'm not sure we'll have them on a regular basis. And so all the program that we basically did that involved so much of my time, those were being... Those were being replaced with other duties. For instance, we were going more in for writing grants to support the program's need for funds to document. For instance, Peggy did six, one of our folk administrators did six slide tape programs that are used many, many times during the schools. And one of the duties that I have to perform is to program and send out and not overlap those six slide tape programs. We have six of those, and that's doesn't seem like a lot, but they're used extensively throughout all 68 counties here in Florida. And then, of course, we've produced a videotape on the life of Lucretia Clark, a famous now, by
now
the way.
She is,
she's been everywhere. White oak basket maker right over in a little community called Lamont, Florida. And we have to make sure that that gets to the library or a school or whatever other civic organization that wants to use that without any overlap. Now, all of these things are a rental fee, but it takes some keeping up with to make sure that they get to that spot on time. That's one of the duties. I still assist with the Florida Folk Festival every year in helping, I suppose.
Looks to me like you make it go.
Well, I work backstage, and of course, you know, anybody who works backstage knows what's going on, but still, I think it takes all of us working hand in hand to make it go. No one person can ever be the one that makes it go. It's still basically the same as what it was before, even though some people rotate on a yearly basis coming back, and I consider it a fine festival every year. Every year, people tell us this is the best one yet. And even this year, people said, this is the best one yet. I was delighted to see Mary McLean and Ida Goodson come for the first time and play on our stage. They were two.
It was a real treat.
Yeah, for everybody.
Yeah, it was. Well, I think I've taken enough of your time.
Yeah, I think so too.